Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Life Science Rundown. This is Nicholas Katman with the FDA Group. Before we jump into our discussion for today, just a little bit about the FDA Group. We help life science companies in the areas of quality assurance, regulatory affairs, clinical operations, commissioning, qualification, and validation, as well as CMC. We offer three different engagement models, which are consulting, staff augmentation, and full-time employee recruitment. So if you ever find yourself in need, just head over to thefdagroup.com, check us out, and get in touch. So today I am speaking with Steve Knowles. Thank you for joining, Steve.
All right, Mel. I'm very happy to be here. Thank you.
Awesome. So we'll jump right into it. Could you introduce yourself and talk a little bit about your background and experience and what we're going to be discussing today?
Yeah, sure. So my name is Steve Knowles. I'm the Chief Medical Officer at Halozyme based in San Diego, California. My background, I'm a physician from the UK. I'm from the north of England. I was brought up halfway between Manchester and Liverpool in the north. I was the first person in my family to go to university. We were a coal mining family prior to that. I spent 17 years working in the UK health service. I worked through various specialties, including diabetes, hospital medicine residencies, radiation oncology, and ultimately general practice. My career was driven in many different ways, really by my desire to learn more, have a bigger impact, and keep busy as well. I joined the pharmaceutical industry back in 2001. I joined Eli Lilly. I was there for 16 years, specialized mainly in drug safety pharmacovigilance. And I've been at Halozyme now for 5.5 years and gradually grown to this expanded role of chief medical officer over the last 5 years.
Excellent. And what are we going to be talking about today?
So today we're talking about drug delivery technology and leadership. Drug delivery technology and the improvements in that area are going to benefit and are benefiting patients. And that requires leadership from a company perspective to make the right decisions on where to go and what technologies to develop. It also takes leadership from all members of the team, a leadership team down to the associates. We need to take risks. Companies are moving into areas that are new, are innovative. We're solving issues that haven't been solved before. And so with that comes some element of risk, but leadership is about enthusing people, having people take those risks, and moving the business forward.
Great. On the topic of drug delivery, since you came into the industry, how have you seen that area evolve? And what are kind of the newest things that are happening today and upcoming in the future?
So I go back even to clinical practice when people would go to the hospital to have most of the, if not all of the treatments, and may spend, I worked in oncology for a time, and may spend 2 or 3 days having continuous intravenous infusions of the chemotherapy drugs. So over time, those ability to deliver drugs in different places has actually improved across all therapeutic areas. We all know with diabetes and insulin, that people have been self-injecting insulin for years, but that's gradually expanded. We've got better ways of delivering infusions so people can carry pumps on their belt and kind of go home and have these long, long infusions. Auto-injectors and devices are now very common as monoclonal antibodies have been developed over the last 20 years. And in many conditions, such as autoimmune disorders, psoriasis, rheumatoid arthritis, people now self-administer through an injection at home, don't require to go to hospital to get whatever infusions they would have needed. And then more recently, ability to give larger volumes subcutaneously using on-body devices where people kind of attach it to your abdominal wall, and then you can walk around for half an hour, 2 hours, or even nerve short injections where you can give a large volume just over a few minutes instead of a few hours. So it's, the change has been continuous, and the change will continue going forward.
Mm. What are some of the benefits that you're seeing with some of the newer drug delivery technologies? What are some of the benefits that patients have been able to take advantage of? And just a glimpse into the future, what are some of the additional benefits that you hope that the patient population will be able to take advantage of?
I think it's the potential to administer outside of infusion centers. Let's take oncology because that's where a lot of patients are receiving these high volume, long intravenous infusions over many hours. So as the industry and academia gets better at delivering subcutaneous injections, it offers the potential that a patient may not have to travel to an infusion center. It could be administered more closer to home. Many people live many, many miles from infusion centers. Infusion centers are very busy, and some not everyone enjoys the kind of multiple hours of sitting in the chemotherapy chair. So the option of maybe having your treatment closer to home in the local doctor's office, and ultimately even self-administered at home in the same way I mentioned insulin is self-administered now as a routine, have been for decades. But these new technologies offer the potential that in the future, people can self-administer these larger volumes. And again, that benefits the patients. They don't have to travel. It benefits the carers. They don't have to take time off work, just kind of take their loved ones to the clinic. But also, it helps the healthcare system because if you can administer medicines in a few minutes versus a few hours, they can be more efficient in the number of patients they treat and choose the sites of where they're treated. So there's many benefits there for both the patients and the healthcare system. And as time moves forward, I would hope that that will become more available to many more patients across many more therapeutic areas.
With new technology, there's obviously a lot of benefits, but there's challenges that come with everything, right? And right off the bat, two areas that I see of potential issues arising are human factors and compliance. So, can you talk about some of the challenges with these newer technologies?
So the challenges that we have to approach, but in fact, the challenges that we've addressed many times, monoclonal antibodies for autoimmune disorders, as I mentioned earlier, been around for a decade or two now. Monoclonal antibodies for oncology cancer treatments as well. So if you take the autoimmune space, those are injections of less than 2 mL, small injections, they're delivered by an auto-injector, so the patients will self-administer under the skin. So we already know that that kind of program requires a human factor study. We need to determine that the product can be used in the way it's intended to be used by patients. And so the human factors approach is a well-established approach. We know how to manage those studies. We know how to run those studies. So that we build that in. So that we've been there. What we need to think about is that is an added step because when we move into these larger volume injections, potentially self-administered, people don't necessarily, to your point, automatically think we need to run human factor studies because they're so used to not doing them because that's never been an issue. You don't need a human factor study for an HCP to administer an IV infusion. But it's not new. The guidelines globally are well established, and we know how to run those studies. So it's a step we need to address, but it's a step we've addressed many times before.
Now, in terms of the benefits to patients, obviously convenience is top of mind, but what are some of the other benefits that patients are going to be able to take advantage of with some of these new technologies?
So, yeah, convenience is the big one, but it's convenience in many ways. It's the time it takes, it's the location, that it's the impact on loved ones and carers who, as I say, have to take time off work to actually take them to a clinic. So convenience is a major advantage to this. By enabling treatments closer to home, there's financial considerations for people. It's less travel, there's less financial cost, less time off work, there's less financial cost. Ultimately, when these drugs are given subcutaneously, there is a different what we call a pharmacokinetic profile to intervene this. So it's as drugs are as developed in the subcutaneous route, sometimes the profile can of the safety profile can improve. We've seen an example with some oncology products where when you give the product subcutaneously, that the maximum level of the drug in the blood is lower than it is when you give an intravenous infusion. And in some cases, that can lead to some less side effects, such as acute reactions when you infuse the product, because that maximum level of drug is lower when it's given subcutaneously versus intravenously.
Makes sense. One other thing that popped in my mind is, what are some of the kind of big questions that people in this space are asking? For people that are interested in this topic and they're listening to this podcast, what are some of the questions that you kind of hear every so often? And certainly would like to know what the answers to those questions are if you have them.
Yes. The biggest question we have in subcutaneous drug delivery is the volume. Can you give a large volume? Everyone is used to 2 mils, 2.25 mils or less. Anybody listening to this who's given a subcutaneous injection knows what happens. You get to put the needle in, you start to push, and then within a few seconds, that bleb appears. It gets harder. That bleb is quite hard, and it just gets hard to push against that pressure in the skin. There's something called hyaluronin, or HA, which is like a gel, which prevents fluid just bursting around. So we all know that once you get 2 mils, it actually gets quite hard to push, and then the potential for causing some discomfort. So the biggest question is, okay, so can you give more than 2 mils? How is that actually possible? Sometimes people don't quite believe that you can give tens of mils, if not sometimes hundreds of mils subcutaneously. And there are different ways of doing that, but that is the biggest question in subcutaneous delivery, is that high volume, high dose, is that actually possible to do?
And is it?
Yes, it is. So there are multiple ways to do it. So there are approved products for something called immunodeficiency, where people have to have their immunoglobulin replaced because they have a natural deficiency and they're prone to infections. Mm-hmm. So that can be given. It can be given over multiple injections subcutaneously. It can be infused over an hour or two. So that volume limitation can be overcome by simply slowing down the infusion and just slowly giving that over several hours, also with multiple doses. But there's also technologies available now, which I mentioned, this thing called HA in this gel-like substance in the skin that limits that fluid from flowing. The technology is now available that break down that HA and temporarily increase that space so the fluid can disseminate. So we know that, again, an approved product for immunodeficiency, they can administer up to 600 milliliters, over half a liter of fluid under the skin in a couple of hours or so, because that barrier to the fluid flow has been removed. So yes, it can be done. In the oncology space, the volumes are much smaller, 10, 15 mils. But yes, it's possible to infuse hundreds of mils. And within a day or two at the most, that skin returns to normal. And so it can be repeated over time as well. So there are approved products in the US now that enable that large volume to be given really very quickly compared to what you could do if you didn't break down that HA.
Yep. Awesome. Thank you. You know, one of the things that I'm really always curious about, and something that I really like to talk about, is leadership and management. And I know when the introduction you talked about the importance of that. Can we transition from drug delivery, or maybe combine the topic of drug delivery and leadership? And, you know, what does that mean to you?
Yes, sure. So as I mentioned earlier, there's the company leadership and there's the individual leadership. So at Halozyme, some 20 years ago, we determined that a route forward was to develop an enzyme, a human form of hyaluronidase, which is an enzyme will be well known to many people. It's been known around since the 1940s when it was first discovered. That's an area that we can, as a company, develop something that could be really meaningful for patients, because the enhanced technology that we develop breaks down that HA. That's the enzyme, the human enzyme that Halozyme created, and then ultimately have got it approved in the US in six products where our enzyme is co-formulated with another antibody. So that was the company decided that was an area of risk. No one has done that with a human hyaluronidase before, but we felt that was the place to go because the benefits to patients that we've discussed earlier are there. So that was a risk. And I think when I wasn't here at the time, obviously it was a while ago, but talking to people who are in the company or knew the company at the time, is people really did not believe that they could do this. So yeah, so the company had to show leadership, had to be brave and say, no, we believe in this technology. We know it's going to be beneficial. We will overcome the skeptics. We will generate the data. And in time, the data will show us whether it works or not. But they had a belief that this will be the right thing to do. And so showed that leadership to take that product. And it's like Halozyme today has the only approved human hyaluronidase in the US. So the company took that track. And I think they've shown that risk-taking, that leadership was worthwhile because of the benefits that patients have seen since that time. And then the individuals within the organization have continued to solve problems. So Halozyme works with other pharmaceutical partners. We solve problems. They have solved problems, as I mentioned, at the high volume. Every drug combination is different, brings its own challenges. Drug development itself is a challenging space to be in. But by collaborating closely with our partners, by solving problems, by moving forward, by enthusing in our own teams the vision for what we're doing, it's often very difficult for a lot of people in pharmaceutical companies to understand how their role is benefiting patients. Some roles are very obviously, if you develop a drug, you very clearly can see where you were, your con what your contribution was. But many people, kind of hard in your day-to-day job, think, well, how does this fit in this total vision? So leadership means enthusing people, giving them the vision, giving them direction, explaining and understanding, having them understand how they fit into this drug delivery platform that we have, and how what they do every day ultimately is a benefit to patients. And I think that's very important, because that's hard to see, that when you're sat at your computer and filling out your form and go there, that in the end we're all pulling in the same direction. So that's where it comes down to. We've got to communicate with our team, we've got to know our team, but we've also got to let them make decisions. We talked about taking risks and moving forward and solving problems. You don't solve that by sending everything up to leadership team. You've got to recruit, employ, and coach the right people, and you've got to enable them to make decisions. And there's some risk in that. We all make mistakes. Yeah, none of us are perfect. It's how do we respond to the mistakes? How do we understand how it happened? How do we not do it again? But we are not perfect. So it's generally getting people, enabling to do their job, making their work meaningful, and letting them do it. Trust but verify. That's kind of the
Trust and
standard
verify.
mantra, isn't it? Trust but
Yeah, for
verify.
sure. Absolutely. So, on the topic of leadership, I heard two things. One is I heard purpose and making sure that people understand how their daily activities are contributing to the larger picture. And I also heard you talk about the value of autonomy. So, could you maybe touch on those two pieces and maybe help me understand and the audience understand from your perspective, what are some of the to-dos, things that we should be doing in order to promote purpose and autonomy, and what are some of the don't-dos that you found haven't worked?
I think initially being clear with what are the goals. What are the goals of the company, and what are the goals of the teams and the individuals? And they need to align. If we have a goal that's not aligned with a company goal, corporate priority, then we should say, well, why are we doing this? it's work, but we need meaningful work. We don't need just doing work. So first of all, we need to align. If we're doing work that's not aligned with the major priority of the company, then it's, in effect, we're wasting our time. We're creating work for the sake of work. Now, if someone believes that work actually is very important to the company hasn't recognized that, then we should, as a company, be open to listen to views, listen to our employees, listen to our team to say, look, I think this is a very useful project we should undertake. Then I say, well, okay, well, why? What is the rationale for that? What is the goal of that? How are you going to do that? How are you going to manage that with the other work? But if there's an effective business case of doing something new, different, then yes, we should be open. We don't know the leadership team. We don't know everything. The people who are doing the work often know best how to do, not often, will know best how to do the work that they're doing day to day. And if they see a better way, we should be open to letting them speak about that and do that. And if it's a relatively simple way of streamlining their work, then I would say we let people do it. Just do it. But if we decide if what doesn't work is where if everything comes up to a senior management leadership team level, gets into corporate governance, if all those small things get there, nothing gets done. It slows down, and yeah, there's always a why. So I think that's when it doesn't work. If you send everything up to a level, you need an oversight and the governance. You need to make sure things are getting done, but we need to trust and empower people to make even what might be small steps day to day. But let's just let people do their work. If you're always having to ask, becomes not very satisfying. It might become less meaningful because then you don't have that ownership, that autonomy you mentioned, if you're always having to check everything. So it comes back to trust but verify. There's a and make sure your team and your peers know where that level falls. And if they're not sure, let them ask. But even by asking me kind of do something doesn't mean I have to take it all the way up the tree. So again, giving managers at all levels that autonomy to make those decisions day to day, and keep the business working, make the decisions, take those risks, take the reasonable risks. When things don't work, which they won't, then we quickly figure out what happened and make sure we don't do it again.
Mm-hmm. Great. One of the things you said is oftentimes the people that are, and I forget the term you use, I'll say on the ground know better, right?
Right.
So the idea of somebody knowing better means that sometimes they know what's not working, right? And oftentimes when they see something that's not working, that's a problem. And in order to escalate it, they have to feel a sense of security. Right. And I'm a big advocate of that. And as much as I make an attempt in my role to really open up the door and make sure people feel safe and come in, and I would say that I have been successful in that regard, but there is this thing that I call the C-level veil, right? Where people are sometimes hesitant to want to bring bad news to upper management. How do you overcome that?
So, there's research. I think maybe it's Microsoft talked about that security. Teams function better when they have that security. They feel they can raise questions up. So the culture we have at Healthline, we have this one team approach where we want people who are curious. We want people who are flexible. Want people who want to learn. But also we place a great emphasis on how we work with each other. So we rise by lifting others. We communicate with each other. We celebrate. We give feedback. We take feedback. We coach. We take coaching at all levels. That's important to us. We train ourselves on having crucial conversations. So how do you have a conversation that's going to be uncomfortable, difficult. How do you raise those issues up? But as leaders at all levels of organization, we need to make sure people feel that it's a safe environment to do that. So we talk about that a lot. We believe that's how we work. We will always learn how we can be better at doing that, but we want and we strive to create that safe environment where people feel they can ask, they can challenge, you know, do these stop-start exercises where that comes from the team level. But also when we get that feedback, I think it's very important that we act upon it, that we acknowledge it. If it's just an exercise where people get to pass comments and they hear nothing ever again, then that's not a good, that safe environment either, because the people will feel ignored. So we have a responsibility to respond to the feedback and the ideas. Now, sometimes that may be, I'm sorry, that at this point in time is not something we can or want to do. It's not in fitting with a corporate or priority we have at this time. But again, acknowledging why, just not ignoring people, and then where things can be improved, making sure that we communicate back that we've taken those ideas, give people a forum. So we have every 2 weeks, we have the all company, we call it All Hands, gets on the phone. And we regularly have people from different functions showcasing what they've done, the projects that they've led, the successful outcomes that they've achieved. So giving people that showcase also to show what they've done. So people don't feel ignored, because that ultimately, if that's what happens and that veil prevents, you know, it's all one way and nothing ever comes back again, that's not going to empower, enthuse, give people autonomy to work. So we've got to work both ways.
Yeah. So in everything that you just said, you painted a pretty good picture about what the culture at Halozyme is. I heard the word we a lot. So that shows me that it's not you and your style as much as it's the broader culture of the organization. I have two questions. One is, what aspects of Halozyme's culture do you find are the most beneficial? And do you have any concrete examples of where the culture at Halozyme had a positive outcome toward the development of technology?
I think we have a culture of we talk about one team, you know, that we are one team, but we have a culture where we are curious and flexible, and we will get work done, and we will work as one team to get this done. So an example of that was a year of 16 months ago, Halozyme acquired a device company, Antares. So we acquired access to an auto-injector technology. We believe that with that auto-injector technology and our enhanced, we have the potential to create a high-volume auto-injector. We talked about self-administering through an auto-injector, but limited to 2 mils. We felt that we had the potential to develop up to a 10-mil auto-injector that could be given in 30 seconds approximately. So again, something that would be a huge step forward, and no one had actually done that successfully before. So the team came together. I mean, as many people listening will know, going through an acquisition, that there's time, there's a lot of work, you've got to integrate the companies, understand each other, and make sure that the work keeps getting done as the two companies join. But in the middle of that, we determined that we needed to move forward to this. And we got a team together of the individuals across all the functions, and we ran our own clinical study. We're not, and are not today, a clinical development company. We've been through several iterations. Some years ago, we did have clinical development programs running, but we moved to this more platform-based approach. But we took people from different functions. We took their experience, including myself, and we said, no, we will submit an IND. We'll write the protocol. We will get this study done that no one's ever done before. And we did it. And we talked about it publicly just a few months ago. We successfully completed that first study showing that we could inject this 10 mils of fluid over 30 seconds, which again, in humans, and have it very well tolerated, which is key. And we did that. So that was us pulling together. We were curious that, yeah, we were kind of strengthening our memories from when did we, you know, a clinical trials project. We had a small operations group. We used the CRO, but we used the expertise and experience, and we came together and we solved the problem. But how, as a company that is really concentrating on platforms, we did it. We ran our own clinical trial, and that was exciting. We loved it. There were many challenges as we went along doing that, but we got that done, and that was, we talked about that publicly just a few months ago. So yeah, we pulled together. We understood the importance of that high volume auto injector. We understood this has not been done before. There was risk. We did, you know, we didn't really know what's going. We hoped we knew what was going to happen, but you never know when you start running clinical trials. But we were confident it was the right thing to do, and we pulled together and we got it done. So I think that was a great example of the one team taking risks and getting something done.
Awesome. Another thing I was thinking is, as leaders and managers, we're always a work in progress. We're evolving. We're constantly learning. I have two questions. How would you describe how your leadership and management style has evolved? And what would you say you're most proud of?
So over time, because going back to when I talked about working in medicine, I worked across many different kinds of specialties and I have many different interests. I was always wanting to learn, be challenged, see if there's somewhere else I can make an impact. So I kind of got to know a little bit about a lot. I love to get into the detail. I love to understand what's going on. I can be a nerd and go and deep read on something. One thing I've learned over time is that I can't do that because there's too much when I've got a large team. But B, I also don't need to do that because I've hopefully employed and coached and the right people. So I've got better at that, allowing people to do their work, having enough understanding to know what they're doing and to know, based on my experience, where things might go wrong, and concentrating on those areas and trusting that we're usually reasonably straightforward, that people can do their job, but knowing where to focus my attention to where there may well be an issue based on stuff I've seen before or just my general experience. So I've got better at that. I can still be better. I've got to learn sometimes just to stop talking, listen,
right.
Listen. I've got better at knowing enough to understand what they're doing and understand if it's going well. So I think that's where I continue to learn, because my career, I still take on new areas. I still learn new skills. I still have new teams. So I just got to keep repeating that, trust but verify. We all say it, but doing it can be challenging. But I think I've got better at that. But I will get better.
In terms of your education and learning, are there any books or seminars that kind of come to the forefront of your mind as being useful and something that you would recommend?
I like to read broadly. I like to read the kind of real life examples. One book that we used extensively at Halozyme is The 5 Dysfunctions of a Team.
Oh yeah, yep, very familiar. Is that Patrick Lencioni?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that tells a story. I like stories.
I love stories.
it feels better. It's less dry. It's more meaningful. So I think the book we use as a standard here, that was actually very useful because the story illustrates where things at elite, this is set at least at team level, executive team, but what can go wrong and why. And how the foundation of everything is the trust at the bottom of that pyramid. But ultimately, at the top, you all need to be aiming for the same goal. And in the middle, holding each other accountable. So I think that one is an excellent one. A light-hearted one. What's the one? Who Stole My Peas? I thought that was quite funny.
I've heard of that book. I haven't read it. But yeah, I've heard of that one.
It's relatively simple, but and a bit of humor is good as well. You know, who stole my cheese? I never thought of it in that way. But yeah, I mean, for most, the cheese is the most important thing. So if
yeah.
someone's So that was a good one, but I as I say, I place faith in kind of learning what's happening around me. I mean, look at the industry blogs and the industry news, and understand things changing companies, and often you get some insights into what's happening there, which can give you some understanding of kind of what might be happening outside. So I think just for me, staying broad as far as you can, because there's experience everywhere. And just try to kind of absorb what you can. And then ultimately, we all work with good people. We work with less experienced. We work with more experienced people. Take the best and the less good about people and plot your own course.
Mm-hmm. Great point. Well, this conversation has been really beneficial, and I've enjoyed it in terms of learning about drug delivery systems and, you know, how leadership can tie in. As we wrap things up, what advice would you leave everybody listening with? And also, I'd really like to know if there's anything else you wanted to add. Probably most importantly, you know, kind of what excites you about your current role, the future of your role, and the future of Halozyme?
So I'd say to people, just keep interested, keep your energy levels up. Yeah, we all have days where you wake up and think, oh, I'm not sure about today. but just get into it. The best way to get over any hesitancy or nervousness is just to get into it. Today, preparing for the podcast, I'm not one who, that few minutes or earlier in before something like this is, I don't enjoy that period of time. But once I get into it, then I kind of relax and hopefully it flows. So I would say, don't hold yourself back by thinking, oh gosh, what might go wrong? What might not go wrong? I'm really worried about this. Just get into it. Get into it with your partners. Talk to people, talk to your colleagues. You're not alone. So that'd be my first one. Secondly, just be intellectually curious. I mean, I think what we do in the pharmaceutical industry, in medicine, healthcare services, is we're trying to make life better for everyone, and we're all patients. So be intellectually curious. There is so much we don't know. There's so much we have to learn. There are so many challenges that we need to address. And like, be curious, learn, and do what you can to help solve those. So I think those would be my main ones. And the last one is, we're all, you know, as a team, you're in this together. You're not on your own. I mean, it's easy to kind of get stuck on your computer and don't talk to anybody and put the silos up and the shutters up. But no, just get out there and talk to people. Problems really are better when you actually talk to someone about it.
So
they really are. So I think those, for me, the future here at Halozyme is it's an exciting time. The company itself has been through several iterations in the time I've been here. I mentioned we were a clinical development company. Unfortunately, our pancreatic cancer program failed. The drug didn't work. So we changed, and then we bought a device company. We changed again. We are going to change again. The company will be different in a couple of years than it is today. And I think for me, that's exciting. That gives us all opportunities, more learnings, probably roles that I've not even thought I'd do will come on my horizon. So when they do, grab the opportunities. So that's, I think that the future is exciting for the industry, for healthcare, and for Halozyme. We're enjoying what we do. We're busy, but I think the future looks fun and interesting, and we'll help drive ourselves there.
Yep. Awesome. Well, I really appreciate you taking the time, Steve. And for everybody listening, as always, if you find conversations like this valuable, please share it with a colleague or your professional network. If you haven't already, subscribe to get updates of new episodes at thefdagroup.com/podcast and follow the FDA Group on LinkedIn. If you'd like to connect about project or resource needs, head over to thefdagroup.com to get in touch, or feel free to connect with me personally on LinkedIn. So thank you so much for tuning in, and we'll see y'all next time.